You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParadiseInsider.com. Presented by CJMarsRadio.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for October 13th, 2015. And this is episode number 236. And this is your host, as always, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. We have an interesting show this week for you. This week's news includes an out-of-body experience. Well, maybe not really live on the show. Ouija board gone wild, how not to attend church. A eulogy to a forgotten ghost hunting pioneer. We'll talk the birds and the bees and whether to photograph these, surviving another apocalypse, and an update on the Oklahoma car monster, plus conferences, conventions, and hopefully much, much more. First, I want to pause and let everyone know who's listening. If you're listening to this as an archive, you're missing out. We have a brand new chat room at cjmarsradio.com. It's a highly interactive chat room, and I know chat rooms are... Some people feel that they're a thing of the past. Message boards have pretty much died off for social media. But a chat room and a live show is a very interesting thing to have because you have people talking about the subject matter further in depth than what I can hear on the show as I'm just talking. Sometimes I'll jump in there and I'll look at some things that people are talking about and I'll address that as we go through it. That's just your basic chat room, but the new chat room here that we have at cjmarsradio.com has a lot of interactive potential. We can now post links, videos, all sorts of new technological advances that I have to get used to that I'll be making use of here during the show. So it's going to be just a whole lot more than me sitting up here for an hour and talking. It's going to be a lot more interactive. So if you're not listening to the show live, you're missing out on this interaction, and you're missing out on good conversation, but you're also missing out on the links and a lot of other information that I'll be providing in the future about these stories that I'm talking about. I'll probably be including some links to PowerPoint presentations that I've done about some of the topics that I'll be talking about during the show, as well as a lot of other inside information, because after all, this is the Paranormal News Insider. So don't miss out on the live show. Again, every Tuesday night, 7 o'clock Eastern, and you can jump on the chat room at cjmarsradio.com. Lots of other fantastic programming as well, not just this show. Lots of shows going on. And this show is about the news. And this week, there's a little bit more news. Last week was kind of dead. No pun intended, really kind of a strange time of the year. I don't know why October, November sometimes is also a really dead month for paranormal news. I don't know if it's because of the holidays coming up or right now we're in the political mainstream right now with people worrying about the State of the Union here, new political officials jockeying for office and a lot of the big topics that politicians like to talk about. They generally try to get into the media around this time of the year when voting will take place and when people start to think about who they're going to vote for. And, oh yeah, there's a big show on tonight. Well, I'm not going to watch that. But anyway, I think people are a little bit maybe more involved with real life, but the paranormal is the real life for me. And this is what I like to do. This is what I like to research. And this is what I like to tell you and talk to you about. And interestingly, tonight I don't have any cryptid news and I don't have any UFO news. So that just leaves ghost and other news. Lots of ghost news tonight, this week. One big story that's been pretty viral, I mentioned it at the top of the show, Ouija board gone wild, an interesting viral story. I'll provide the link to that in the chat room when I get to it. But first, a little controversy about out-of-body experiences. So here we are in Ghost News. And last week, I went over the basics of parapsychology, and I discussed the big three, which is ESP, PK, and the survival of bodily death, ESP being extrasensory perception, PK psychokinesis. And I briefly mentioned OBEs, or what's known as out-of-body experiences. We've all heard that phrase spoken in one method or another. It's basically part, again, of the survival hypothesis that includes apparitions, hauntings, and just basically ghosts. But earlier this year, the website Live Science published an article titled, "Out-of-Body Experiences is Traced in the Brain." Now, out-of-body experiences are essentially a person feeling as though they are leaving their physical body somehow, whether asleep or awake. Many describe the feeling of rising above their body and are able to see and experience many things from this perspective. There's been a lot of studies about this. I remember a story years ago where a doctor in Arizona placed target objects above surgery tables, and people were able to identify these target objects. Nobody in the room knew where they were at or what they were exactly, except for the surgeon. Interesting study that just came to my mind. I don't have the link for that, or I would share that. Now, the article on Live Science is based on experiments conducted by Dr. Arvid Guderstam, who won the Nobel Prize in Physiology or Medicine in 2014. It furthers findings of research known as the rubber hand illusion, in which a person wearing video goggles sees a rubber hand being stroked while a researcher strokes the participant's own hand, which is out of sight, which produces the feeling that a rubber hand is the participant's own hand. Creepy. Well, this latest experiment, as outlined on the Live Science website, went like this. Quote, in the latest experiment, the participants lay in an MRI scanner while wearing a head-mounted display that showed video from a set of cameras elsewhere in the room. The cameras were positioned to look down on the body of a stranger, while an image of the participant's own body lying inside the scanner was visible in the background. To produce the out-of-body illusion, the researchers touched the participant's body with a rod while simultaneously touching the stranger's body in the same place in view of the cameras. Well, for the participants, this technique produces the illusion that their body is in a different part of the room than where it actually is, unquote. And the article goes on to state, quote, the researchers found that the hippocampus, a region where the GPS cells, which are involved in navigating one's body in space as well as in memory, have been found, is involving in figuring out where the body is. They also found that a brain region called the posterior cingulate cortex is what binds together the feeling of where the self is located with the feeling of owning a body, unquote. Well, I remember reading this article when it was first published and felt that the experiment might have proven a few things, but it certainly did not invalidate or even explain out-of-body experiences. The website, The Search for Life After Death, states that this experiment is misleading and does not explain OBEs in the context of them occurring in conjunction with NDEs or near-death experiences. The website states, quote, there is no explanation for how a patient can have any conscious experience while their brain has no activity nor their body a heartbeat, yet these patients can know what family members are doing down the hall or what a surgeon said and did while attempting to resuscitate them, unquote. Indeed, the website The Search for Life After Death does a great job explaining an OBE by stating, quote, typical out-of-body experiences occur in the twilight stage when your body is falling asleep, but your mind is still conscious, sometimes referred to as the hypnagogic state. When your body falls asleep completely, it activates a type of paralysis to avoid us acting out in our dreams. This is a common source of night terrors. Apparently, if you can retain your consciousness awareness through the paralysis stage, you can then separate your consciousness from your body, which is often experienced as floating up and out of the body. Looking back, your sleep form is visible on the bed. Once out, most people sense that they have an energy body that they can use to explore the energy duplicate of the physical world or aim higher into different areas of the non-physical universe. Unquote. Well, the experiment seemed obvious that the goal was to explain these sensations without doing any type of research into OBE experiments or include anyone in them who claimed to have the ability to do so. So, in other words, this is basically just experimenter bias. You know, I understand what they're trying to do with that particular study, but again, it just doesn't explain. It tries to explain this scientifically and through the perspective of the viewer, but this is beyond just perspective. It's beyond just a feeling of being in somebody's body. This is seeing things that are actually going on around you when you should not consciously be able to see them. Even in the state of, if somebody were to be awake, they may not even be able to see these things, as sometimes people can see in other rooms or even on another continent. So obviously they didn't really do their homework very well. And, you know, hey, OBEs, to those who have experienced them, are real, and they're not just an illusion. They're not just seemingly being in an illusion state of not being in the room. Well, the next story, this is a kind of a weird and interesting story, and I'll post the link here on the message board, and you can go check it out as I talk about it. It's, it's interesting. 18-year-old Patricia Quispe, I don't know how to pronounce that, Quispe, Quispe, from Chosica, Peru, downloaded a Ouija board app to her smartphone while at a party with her friends. I don't even think I need to go any further with this. I think you can kind of imagine what's going to happen here. Well, when Patricia returned home, her parents noted that she was acting strange. Well, not that 18-year-olds act perfectly normal all the time. Well, then again, do any of us? However, by acting strange, Patricia was reportedly foaming at the mouth, convulsing, and screaming with no apparent injuries. While they thought that she might be on drugs or have eaten something bad, Patricia confessed that it might be the Ouija board app. Her parents then called paramedics who took her to the hospital to find out what might be wrong. During the hospital stay, a two-minute video was shot of Patricia screaming and generally freaking out while in a hospital bed. Let's pause for a second and think about that. Again, filming a family member having some sort of breakdown in a hospital, I guess that's normal in these situations, right? That's something we would all do. Well, she was purportedly admitted to the psychiatric ward of the hospital for more observation, as no physical source was found for her actions, and many feel that she was possessed by a demon, which prompted her behavioral changes. Well, now's where the show gets interesting. This is where I voice my opinion, and not too many people may agree with what I'm about to say, but I've got to say it, because this is my belief, and hopefully it's the belief of a lot of other people out there, and this is kind of controversial, and of all the information that I've ever put on the internet, a blog about the Ouija board has gotten the most hits out of anything, any work I've ever done. So I know that this is an interesting thing and things that something that people are really interested in. And as viral as the story has gotten already, I know there's a lot of interest in it. Well, I've got to stop beating around the bush and just jump into this. In many of my presentations, I share the work I've done on years of research with the Ouija board, not just using the Ouija board, but where the belief of possession from it actually comes from. In the age of spiritualism in the mid-1800s through the early 1900s, the Ouija spirit or talking board, as it's also known, was just one of many tools used in divination. In the early 1900s, the Ouija board became very popular with the general public beyond the mediums who used it as a business tool. It was then the Catholic Church and subsequent other churches began to attack the use of the Ouija board since it was extremely popular and make these generalizations about what it can do to scare the general public away from spiritualism and back to their pews. In reality, there was no mention or no documentation to validate any of the accusations about the Ouija board in the history of talking boards or other divination tools and the Catholic Church today still warns of evil, but the only backup they have is from the Bible, which is, I mean, come on, is essentially a guidebook to life that they pick and choose what they desire as important, as well as the information they get from exorcists. According to Catholic.com, they say that this about the testimony of their exorcist, quote, their experience shows that Ouija boards are far from harmless. Some investigating supernatural phenomena from a Catholic perspective have gone on so far as to say that 90% of their very worst cases involving demonic activity have been linked to the use of the Ouija board, unquote. Other valuable information from Catholic.com outlines their belief in the powers of the toy by stating, quote, it's true that many people view the Ouija board as harmless. They often claim, oh, I don't believe in it, or something to that effect. However, a disbelief in something does not necessarily mean that something isn't real. The Ouija board has an objective reality that exists apart from a person's perception of it. In other words, it's real even if you don't believe in it. And we know this because God himself tells us so. Unquote. That again, the Ouija board has an objective reality that exists apart from one from a person's perception of it. In other words, it's real even if you don't believe in it. And we know this because God himself tells us so. Okay. So their belief in the powers of the board are based on essentially a logical fallacy. It's like saying God exists because we believe, and those who don't believe in God are wrong because we believe in it. It's similar to the argument between religious people and atheists, where one side says you cannot prove God exists, and the other side says you cannot prove God does not exist. It's called an argument from ignorance and is based on the analogy of unfalsifiable claims known as Russell's teapot. Look that one up. Many paranormal groups put a warning on their websites that they do not use Ouija boards and will not help clients who do so either. So I guess the fear and misunderstanding are continuously perpetuated and have created a firm belief that the board possesses great power. No pun intended about possesses. For the pot calling the kettle black, let's look quickly at how a paranormal group approaches their casework versus how a Ouija board is used. I do this at a lot of my presentations, and it wows the crowd because they're amazed at how simple an observation and perspective is on how we use tools and how we fear Ouija boards. So a Ouija board is powered by people holding on to the plastic planchette and moving it around the board while asking questions and hoping to get answers when the planchette lands on certain letters in the combination or just on a word, yes or no. In reality, the planchette is moved by what's called unconscious muscular action, UMA, or what's called the ideomotor effect, where our minds subconsciously move it. In the act of investigating ghosts, investigators use tools and other technology while asking questions and hoping to get generalizations or questions answered through EMF spikes and EVP. Many will argue the details, but on the surface, how is there a difference? Is there anyone there? Please tell us your name. These questions asked using a Ouija board or a set of fancy equipment are really no different, as the bottom line is that they're used as a means of a conduit to interact with ghosts. Well, you know, one might say, well, the tools are scientific. Please, if you're going to say that the Ouija board is not a toy made of plastic and cardboard, but is a demonic portal device, then the same assumption about electronic gadgets, may I remind you, some of which are made specifically for entertainment use only, radio sweepers, paranormal pucks, the obelisks, and so on, should also be made. Just because they measure things or have batteries and flashing lights, and there is an assumption of science, should not be enough to protect those from the evil that they believe can be delivered from divination tools. Well, I once wrote a blog where I called a K2 an electronic Ouija board that was invented in 2008 as the same approach to communication is being conducted, whether there are fingers on a planchet or the hopes of lights blinking to questions. Ouija boards are larger conduits of belief than anything else. And in the case of Patricia, it is more than likely this fear that has caused the reaction. And with many, the fear turns into what's called mass hysteria, not demons. Patricia's fears more than likely were rooted by her friends who more than likely talked about possession, and her reaction was based on that fear. Right now, as I read the story, there are people out there that may be reacting angrily at my words and feel that I'm completely wrong. Well, this is the belief that has been ingrained in us, and we would not feel this way if she was using a pendulum, a crystal, divining rods, or a K2. Yet these are all divination tools, which under definition of the Catholic Church are all rooted in evil and can carry the same powers as the Ouija board. It's just the Ouija board just unfortunately gets the bad rap in all this. And while that is well and good, we have to consider this point too. The biggest point of the story is that it's not even a real Ouija board she was using. It was a smartphone app. And also, another important thing is we still don't know if drugs or alcohol or anything else was a factor in her reaction. All we really have is her word on this. And all we really have on the story is a video, a 2-minute video of somebody strapped in a gurney screaming in a hospital room. So we don't really know the facts of the story, but I figured I'd attach a little bit of learning and teaching from about the Ouija board about this. And that's probably not the last you're going to hear about my opinion on the Ouija board. I don't think they're as dangerous as what people think it is. It's cardboard and plastic. It's sold in Toys R Us. If it was really that dangerous, then there was really scientific backing to prove that this was evil and people were harmed from it. There would be a warning sticker on it. It would be taken off of shelves. It would have been banned a long, long time ago, and it wouldn't be used. And, you know, some people have rules about the Ouija board, and they say, well, you know, as long as you're not asking for verification, everything is okay. Well, one thing I've said before is there are no rules in ghosts. You can't make up things. You can't say that ghosts confide to a particular set of rules, and we can say one thing or another about all that. It's a toy. That's all I think of a Ouija board. I've used them plenty of times. I have a little keychain that I carry around that is a toy Ouija board. It's a lot of fun to play with at the doctor's office or at the airport. All right. Well, that being said, move into the next story here. And this is a kind of a sad story, but not as sad as the story after that one. Three so-called ghost hunters. I'm not really a fan of that term either, but it is what it is. Were formally sentenced last week for a break-in they committed back in late May at the Nest Church in Litchfield, Minnesota, which was built in 1858 and is no longer in service. Three men and one woman, all in their 20s, broke into the church by breaking windows, which then triggered an alarm. The small group was pulled over after they had fled the scene at around 2 a.m., and one of the men had a cut in his hand, which helped lead to the arrest. They also smashed part of a monument that marks where the first five of an eventual 490 victims of the 1862 U.S. Dakota War were buried in a hurry. A window of an outbuilding was also broken. According to Meeker County Sheriff Brian Cruz, alcohol also played a role. The three males pleaded guilty to one charge of criminal damage to property in the first degree. All three received the same sentence, and somehow the female didn't get charged. She was not part of the sentencing. I found no information of what happened to her. Maybe she claimed she had nothing to do with it, and the men also agreed. But all three males received the same sentence, which was 5 days in jail. But they received credit for 5 days already served. They did receive 5 years of probation, 80 hours of community service, and a payment of $500 in restitution. A 30-day jail sentence also hangs over their heads if they don't meet the conditions of the sentence. Each of the men received a stay of adjunction on the felony charge, which means no conviction will appear on their records if they comply with all the terms of the sentence. The second-degree burglary charges that each faced was dismissed by the court, and in my opinion, they got off light. The Nest Lutheran Church was founded in 1858 and is one of the state's oldest historical sites and the first organized church in Meeker County, according to its Facebook page. It's located about 5 miles south of downtown Litchfield, about 60 miles west of Minneapolis. The church cemetery is the final resting place for the first people killed in the U.S.-Dakota War of 1862. In part because of that history, stories have circulated for decades that the church and cemetery are haunted by the ghosts of Sioux Indians and a little girl named Annie. Some say the church lights come on by themselves in the middle of the night, and apparitions can be seen around the grounds. The church leaders emphasize that there are no ghosts on the property, and it's not haunted, according to Minnesota CBS affiliate WCCO. It's one of those tough stories, you know, people trespassing and damaging property just based on the search for life after death. You know, what we're interested here, we want answers. And when I first started investigating back in 1996, we investigated urban legends, and we did do the cemetery thing because that's just kind of what you did back in those times. And it didn't take too long for me to figure out that the people that were going after the cemeteries and trying to get into a lot of these places were just in it for the thrills. And I wanted nothing to do with that. So ultimately, myself and a smaller group of people went on to form a very serious, like-minded group of investigating that we ultimately, over time of research and getting comfortable with the subject, went into helping clients. And I've not really investigated cemeteries at all, more or less, except for historical purposes, as I really don't feel that they're really a source of interaction. You know, there may be a lot of haunting type activity, a lot of residual activity associated with them. But, you know, for the thrill seekers that are out there, it's just not worth it to go to these places and do damage. I mean, it's one thing if you want to get on the grounds and walk around and take pictures and scare yourself at night, which there are plenty of videos of this location. Litchfield is a pretty popular place in the ghost world, actually, but all you have to do is do a little research to figure that out. But it's just not worth it to damage the property. It kind of goes against what you're trying to do. You're trying to connect with history here. So to go on the grounds and damage something, especially something from the mid-1800s, I mean, that's just silly to me. To break windows, to break into a church? I don't care if you're drunk or not. That's pretty stupid. If I can say so myself, I just think it's crazy to act that way. It's crazy to deface property like that. That's on these grounds, and you know it's frustrating to read the story because they really didn't get much of a punishment for it. I mean, their record's going to be expunged. They're not going to have anything on their record, which it would be maybe too much to have a felony burglary charge on your record, but still, you know, it's if they do this now in the early mid 20s here, I think the oldest was 26, and the rest of the men were I think 23 and 24, but it, you know, that's kind of old to be acting like that. I mean, it's crazy that people would act like this and do what they do. And unfortunately, this isn't probably the last story we're going to hear. I mean, this year alone, there's been churches burned down, lots of private property, people breaking into places. And unfortunately, this is the time of the year that it happens. When ghost stories are abound, there's a lot of TV shows. You go to Walmart and all they have is the Halloween videos out. All the scary stuff is out there. All the media is geared towards this time of the year. And people such as myself are going to libraries and talking about ghosts. So it's the time of the year where people get gutsy and they want to go and do things. But please do not destroy private property. Do not destroy these things here. It's just not worth it, and it's just not good. Even for too long, even if you're just in it for one night, fine. But don't ruin it for the rest of us. I guess that's the message I'm trying to say here. And before I start my next story here, I'm going to pause and remind you that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, from Youngstown, New York, on the CJ Mars Radio Network. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And we're going to continue with ghost news here. Kind of a sad story. It's kind of an awkward story for me because I didn't really have a good relationship with this person, but I did know of him and I did speak with him a number of times. And people may be familiar with his name, but people may not be familiar with his name because he's been kind of out of the paranormal for quite a while now. And, oh, heaven's sakes. Well, speaking of UFOs, didn't really get, just got a thing on my phone from NASA saying that the International Space Station is going to be going over where I live in less than 5 minutes. But I'm doing the show. And it's cloudy anyway, so that's good. Essentially, back to the story. We've talked about some deaths a couple of weeks ago from some very popular people in the paranormal and under some very tragic circumstances that led to the murder-suicide in horrible circumstances. This story is not quite that horrible, but the story itself is pretty horrible when you read through this. More sad news from the ghost world this week, as it was revealed that Dr. Dave Oster of IGHS, also known as the International Ghost Hunter Society fame, passed away on October 1st. I didn't always get along with Dave, and like I mentioned, we didn't see eye to eye on a lot of things, and he and I exchanged a few heated emails over the years, especially when it came to photographic orbs. Dave exclaimed to the world that he coined the term orb in the mid-1990s and that he was the pioneer of their discovery and documentation. Well, I sent him a scan of a book printed in the 1970s for an SLR camera guide that explained orbs and used the term. Well, he exclaimed that this was different and that his orbs were spirit orbs and not camera malfunctions. As he continued to generate money from charging people to see his orb photos on his website, the ghost investigation scene slowly understood that orbs were not what he and others were peddling. Just as many others began to attack him for his misguided ways of extorting those who had an interest in ghost investigation, as well as his own erroneous beliefs about orbs, he slowly backed away from his stance on orbs and stated that he never coined the term and that he never believed in them wholly. Well, his thing was always, ghosts are everywhere, and we see orbs everywhere, therefore ghosts are everywhere. Well, he did write multiple books on the subject, as well as certification classes in taking orb photos. Well, all that suddenly disappeared from his website, ghostweb.com. He then jumped on the EVP bandwagon and then moved in the direction of publishing fiction books and attempting to make money in other ways in order to continue to drive around the country in his motorhome with his wife, Sharon Gill. Well, Dave was always criticized for his money-making schemes and was always considered a black eye by those of us who cared about the field. It was he who single-handedly created the belief system of photographic orbs being ghosts, which still continues to this day and has infected clients, in addition to new investigators who still pick up this bad information. But, you know, it's kind of hard to speak ill of the dead. And granted, not many who have come into this field since the Ghost Hunters boom when their show hit the air in 2004 have any idea who Dr. Dave Oster is or how he made such a negative impact on the field. But at the same time, many say he made a very positive impact as a Reiki master, teacher, and author of 46 nonfiction books and 22 novels, all of which were self-published, and as well as being a true believer in the paranormal. He did have one of the most viewed websites of the latter half of the 1990s and was the biggest paracelebrity of his time and a major influence to many who came into this field as it became more popular. In reality, if it wasn't for Dr. Dave, there might not have ever been a Ghost Hunters television show, as he was one of the people who created the online boom in popularity that led producers to believe that a reality show about people investigating ghosts would generate viewers. So, you know, a lot of people think that 2004, the TV show Ghost Hunters came out, This was the start of it all. This is when people started to investigate ghosts. It's really not true. I've had arguments with other people about this. Keith Age is one. You know, he's a big paracelebrity. Everybody knows who he is. Well, he and I don't see eye to eye on that subject either. He considers that there was no ghost groups at that time prior to 2004. Then all of a sudden, once Ghost Hunters came out, there were ghost groups coming out of the woodwork. Well, it's not true. There was tons of ghost groups. I was one of them, and Taps was also one of them. That's how they got their show. There was dozens on the East Coast. There was a lot in Pennsylvania, some on the West Coast, but a lot of them weren't really on the internet. The internet is really what brought all this stuff together, and Dave knew how to drive people on the internet. He was really good at marketing, really good at selling things, and really good at making money. Sadly, the way he died does kind of have a bit of irony to it, is kind of sad as it is to say. His wife, Sharon, of 22 years and companion for far longer, died of cancer in January of 2014. Well, he struggled to put his life together and ultimately fell victim to a catfishing scheme in which he dumped all of his life savings into a woman who had promised him many things but would end up being nothing more than an international internet scam. The ironic thing here is that although he did live his life scamming other people out of a lot of money, one of the things that really bothered me was that he took people's money basically to see pictures on his website that more or less were donated by other people who paid to take his courses, and then ultimately falling prey to the believing that he found all these ore pictures on his own, but he was charging people who were visiting the site, and a lot of the stuff was donated for free by the people who paid money to see his courses. That always drove me nuts. But unfortunately, he fell prey to somebody that was just trying to take his money. And, you know, again, that's kind of ironic because of a lot of the emotions that people had towards him taking other people's money and basically just giving out his opinions and beliefs about all this. What's even more ironic is that he actually published a book called Internet Dating Scams that outlined his journey after his wife died of being involved in numerous internet scams. That book was actually published a year prior to his death, I believe on October 7th of 2014. And on that book, it's kind of eerie when it says, quote, "I will give you the spoiler up front. I did find the woman of my dreams, and we will soon be married. Internet dating does work, but one must navigate to the shoals, reefs, and dangerous waters. This is the story of my experience of internet dating sites after becoming a widower," unquote. Sadly, this woman he was to marry turned out to be the very scam that cost him his home, his retirement savings, and ultimately his life. Dave ran out of money after donating all of his retirement savings and all of his money to this internet catfishing scheme, and could no longer pay for his diabetes medication or food to keep himself alive. He died alone in a hostel on October 1st. His family has set up a GoFundMe site to help aid in his cremation. The link is available at the Paranormal News Insider Facebook page at facebook.com/ParanewsInsider. And you can read a little bit more about Dr. Dave and his plight. It also has links to his website, ghostweb.com, that has a lot of information there as well. It's kind of a sad story, and it's unfortunate. It's sad the way he died, and I still received his emails that he sent out every week, every Saturday, and didn't really read them throughout, but I did peruse them. And it was sad when his wife passed away, and I felt that it was only a matter of time until he were to retire or quit the ghost business, so I thought. And yet he still continued focusing on writing fiction books. And again, I don't think really too many people that have come into the ghost field really know who he was or who he is. But he did have a very big impact on the field in the mid-1990s. So very sad to lose another member of the ghost world, and especially somebody who's been around for quite a while, despite the differences that we had and the kind of negativity that I think he created. So now on to other news. Not quite a paranormal story, but it does kind of sort of have paranormal roots. Since mankind has sought to understand the life forms we share planet Earth with, there's been the method of collection of species in order to classify and understand them. Obviously, the collection of living species means the death of a single or many specimens in order to properly study and catalog each specimen. Well, sometimes animals are merely tranquilized and DNA is extracted in order to provide clarity on whether it is merely closely related to another close relative or a different animal based on simple genetic makeup. Well, this basic collection method has always been the norm of science. Well, until last year. A man named Neil Evenhouse, an entomologist at Hawaii's Bishop Museum, was putting together a book of flies of Africa when he needed photographs on a chapter of bee flies. He contacted Steve Marshall, a professor of biology from the University of Guelph in Ontario, Canada. Marshall provided him with a series of photographs, as he is also a great photographer. One of the flies stuck out to Evenhouse, as it had a distinct pattern of black and yellow and had an oddly shaped body that seemed to mimic the carpenter bee. He knew it was a new species, and he wasn't sure what genus it even belonged to. Marshall had captured the fly to photograph it, but released it after doing so. Evenhouse set the photograph aside until he determined the genus after doing more research for his book. The fly ended up belonging to an extremely rare type of fly found in southern Africa. Until that point, there were only three known specimens in the world of two separate species, and the fly in the photo belonged to neither of them. The two men then decided to attempt to gather to give the fly a name, as they had met the naming conventions for the species laid out by International Commission of Zoological Nomenclature, the body that governs animal taxonomy. The fly was then officially given the name Marley Emea Xylocope and brought to light a boiling controversy, that of naming a species based on photographs alone. Again, this is unheard of. While many in the scientific community welcome this, others see this as a lazy way of doing science and a door opening to many mistakes. After all, a single photograph may be of an oddly colored or oddly shaped example of something already cataloged, or even that photographs may sometimes be misleading. No, really? Others welcome this as a new direction, and at least the initial identification of a potential new species. The naming of the fly will now allow others to go out and study it in the wild, but it still begs the question of how far this practice will go. Granted, we're only talking about flies here, but my comment on this would be, what about photographing, let's say, a cougar in West Virginia? And by cougar, I mean mountain lion. I know some people's minds run wild, no pun intended. Would this be proof enough that the eastern cougar, which was deemed officially extinct in 2011 with no verifiable sightings in a few decades, still exists? Well, many photographs have been taken, but fish and game representatives consistently deny the existence of the animal and state it is either an escaped pet or a wandering western cougar. And, you know, we can even go down the Bigfoot road. It's still far from, you know, Bigfoot being considered real due to a mere photograph. But how far? This controversy continued even more during the week as another story popped up, as a photograph turned up on the Twitter feed from the American Museum of Natural History of a rare male mustached kingfisher. The photo of the blue and gold bird was headlined to be the first ever photographed of a male of the species which is referred to as a ghost bird. Well, then the bad part. The specimen was collected for additional study. Well, in layman's terms, this means the animal was killed so it could be taken back to the museum for display and bragging rights. Chris Filardi, the collector of the animal and director of the Pacific programs at the American Museum of Natural History, caught the bird at high elevations in the Solomon Islands. He states that while seeing the bird is rare, it is not an endangered species, as it merely lives in a location that makes it difficult to see or study consistently. He also states that locals quite frequently dine on the bird, and that his actions of collecting a specimen are standard for a field biologist, which it is. The general public, however, are not so understanding, and even other scientists have compared Filardi to the dentist that killed Cecil the lion. Well, not quite the same thing, but a rift is beginning to form in what is standard practice of collecting animals for merely documenting them as much as possible in the field. And many are attacking this process as barbaric and throw statistics and accusations around, many of which I don't think they would make if this was, let's say, an ugly bird or some type of frog or another animal. It was a cute bird, by the way. Many of the articles written about the story have been extremely negative, and it has painted Filardi as a murderer. But is it necessary to collect animals to study? Well, no, but it is necessary to investigate them in ways that cannot be understood from mere observation. Unfortunately, that is science, and to stop collecting animals would mean not understanding how we are affecting them by altering the environment or how natural changes are affecting or happening to them. Essentially, we would be strangers in our own world instead of understanding more about it. Well, the good news. The good news is this week that we've all once again survived another end-of-the-world scenario. Whew. Back on September 27th, we had the super blood full moon followed by a purported comet that was set to strike the Earth close after that. According to NASA, at least that's what the post on Facebook said that came from blogging websites, but NASA denied this. Now, the eBible Fellowship, an online affiliation headquartered near Philadelphia, has based its prediction of an October obliteration on a previous claim that the world would come to an end on May 21st of 2011. Well, while that claim proved false, the organization was confident that it had the correct date this time. Quote, according to what the Bible is presenting, it does appear that October 7th will be the day that God has spoken of, in which the world will pass away, unquote, said Chris McCann, the leader and founder of the Fellowship, an online gathering of Christians headquartered in Philadelphia. And McCann added, quote, it'll be gone forever, annihilated, unquote. McCann said it according to his interpretation of the Bible, the world will be obliterated, quote, with fire, unquote. Well, good thing is they were wrong once again. But you know, when you think about it, eventually they'll get it right. But I probably won't be here to talk about it. And want to give a quick update to a story I covered back on September 22nd, the September 22nd episode of the Paranormal News Insider, about the Oklahoma car monster where something has been tearing apart cars, causing thousands of dollars in damages. Now, police felt that the culprit was a large white dog, and this based on paw prints and hairs found at the scene. However, the damage is still not 100% consistent, leading them to keep their thoughts open about what could be responsible. More than likely, it is the dog, however. But according to the Green Country Ford in Vinita, Oklahoma, as of yesterday morning, when I spoke with them, there were no developments, and the dog or other animal responsible has not yet been identified. And as far as that's concerned, there's still no update on the supposed merman video that was purportedly shot in Poland. Got a few minutes left here. We can talk paranormal conferences, conventions, and other gatherings. If you sign up with Lloyd Auerbach, trying to remember how I signed up to his – well, I've been taking his classes for years. There's actually a course tomorrow night. I don't know how much space is left on it. October 14th from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m. Pacific time. The class is Psychic Dreaming. It's one session. It's by $50. You can either go there if you want to drive all the way to California, or meet there on by phone. It's an in-depth look on dreaming and how psi manifests in the dream state. There's also many other classes, October 21st and the 28th, on mediumship, history, mystery, and manifestation and science. October 22nd, apparitions, ghost in-depth. And all of these things you can find out by going to his website or emailing him directly at profparanormal@gmail.com. Lots of classes. He's a very good teacher. Lots of information out there on his stuff here. I'm trying to remember what his website is. Lots of classes that he's doing right now on the paranormal, and you can get more information by going to my website at paranewsinsider.com and clicking on the events tab at the top. You can also get more information at Lloyd Auerbach's website at mindreader.com. That's all one word, mindreader.com. He has got a lot of classes there as well. Now, as far as conventions, things are kind of winding down. This coming weekend, there is the ShadowCon 2015, October 16th to the 17th in Fort Wayne, Indiana. The Little Traverse Bay Parafest 2015, also October 16th and 17th in Bayview, Michigan. And the Port Gamble Ghost Conference, October 23rd through the 25th in Port Gamble, Washington. I will also be not really a convention, I guess. This is at the Westerville Public Library in Westerville, Ohio, and that is northeast of Columbus. And I'll be there from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Or probably longer, talking about ghosts, the E4 method, and whatever else comes up. That'll be my seventh consecutive year at that event. The only other event I have in the ghost area is the Old Mill Parafest that takes place November 7th in Dundee, Michigan. I'm starting to put together a list for 2016. I have a few coming up, but obviously not a lot of plans have been made yet for those conferences and conventions, and I'm kind of wary on this time of the year really going after those. So more than likely, probably around November, December is when I'll start building that list of conferences and conventions for 2016. There was probably a record number of them this year. So I would expect that to continue next year. Lots of events coming. As far as UFO events, I've mentioned this before. MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON.com. If you go there, find a chapter. If you find a chapter, which a chapter is a state, you'll find more information. And to a local MUFON symposium, probably the biggest, the one left of the year. As far as conferences for UFOs is Mysteries of Space and Sky 2015, October 24th in Gambrills, Maryland. There's also the Pittsburgh 2015 MUFON Conference, November 14th in Youngwood, Pennsylvania. Cryptozoology, the first annual Fayette County PA UFO, Bigfoot, and Paranormal Expo takes place October 17th in Fayette County, Pennsylvania. And the third annual Boggy Creek Festival takes place October 23rd through the 25th in Fauk, Arkansas, where it all took place. Now, the last few minutes I have here, I'll talk about the book of the week. See, you thought I forgot about it, didn't you? The book of the week in the past, I'm trying to remember here. I think this is only the fourth book of the week. The first book of the week I had back on September 22nd was Benjamin Radford's Scientific Paranormal Investigation. The following week was, I believe, Lloyd Auerbach's book, Ghost Hunting, How to Investigate the Paranormal. And last week we did Ghost Hunters, William James and the Search for Life After Death by Deborah Blum. Now, I did want to go in a different direction, but unfortunately, we didn't do any stories talking about UFOs or cryptozoology this week. So I'm going to have to stick with the ghost theme. And, you know, why not? It's still kind of the Halloween season coming up. I think a lot of us are getting into that mood because of the weather is changing. The trees are changing. It's getting cooler. It's getting darker earlier and lighter later and all that fun stuff. And so ghosts is what it's all about. I mentioned that earlier about the focus on ghosts and things at this time of the year. And the book of the week this week, not really a book I'm proud of, but it was one of the earliest books that I bought. Really, by the time I'd bought this book, I kind of knew a lot about the paranormal already, and I kind of just use it as a guide to see what the general public would know, if that makes any sense, just to kind of gauge as to where my knowledge and education landed with the popular themes. And the book is The Complete Idiot's Guide to Ghosts and Hauntings. This book was written by Tom Odgen and back in 1999. Now, the book is chock full of a lot of information, a lot of information that goes in a lot of different directions. Now, a lot of it is based on speculation, and a lot of it's just common sense information, common sense to how to approach the paranormal. And the cool thing is that being written so long ago, I don't know if there's been new editions of it read or written or not, but this does have a lot of old school stuff in it, such as using chalk to outline items. Yeah, as I'm looking now on Amazon, there was a second edition in 2004. So, wow, I've got an awesome first edition book here. But the first edition was chock full of really good information that was kind of old schoolish for those of us that have been around a long time. And it does kind of border on some of the folklorish types of approaches, but it does talk a lot about history and where beliefs in a lot of different things come. The book is well over 300 pages, 371 pages, a lot of information. It does break down a lot of states onto what's spooky and scary out there. It does talk a lot about hauntings and different things all over the place. But it does talk about some of the belief systems behind all that. It does mention Ouija boards that was a theme tonight. And it does mention that the real danger, according to some occultists, comes when a person asks a spirit to provide physical proof of its existence. This request may, quote, open a doorway, allowing a violent or physical destructive spirit to enter the material world. That's a little warning there by the book. But there is some good information in this book. And it says on the back cover, you don't need a degree in slime management to know about ghostbusting. Well, it doesn't really teach you about how to be an investigator, as the book is called The Complete Idiot's Guide to Ghosts and Hauntings. So the book is an interesting find if you can get a hold of it. I wouldn't pay too much for it. You can get it on Amazon.com for $5.61. For some reason, Kindle's $12. I don't know why that is. Or you can just pick it up from your local library. Not really one I would recommend to buy. It's more or less like a reference type of book. And if you can't afford it and you can get it, it is nice to thumb through every once in a while and see some of the crazy things that a lot of people believe out there, as well as to, again, there is a lot of reference material in here. There is a ton of information gathered by Tom Odgen, who's a professional writer, magician, and a comedian. He's also done The Complete Idiot's Guide to Magic Tricks. So, you know, with an author that doesn't really have much to do with the paranormal, granted, magic is actually closely tied to paranormal things. Lloyd Auerbach, who I've mentioned a number of times, is also a magician. So fooling people and perspective and all these things do kind of go hand in hand. But it would have been nice to see somebody else involved with the ghosts, maybe be a writer of this book as well. Who knows? Maybe I'll throw my hat in the ring one of these days. But again, the book of the week, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Ghosts and Hauntings by Tom Odgen, is our book of the week. It's an interesting book, and hopefully we'll change the direction of ghosts. I do have plenty of UFO books available, as well as a lot of cryptid books, not to mention the five books that I've wrote, but we'll hold those on to a later date and time, more or less. for when that gets interesting. And I want to thank everybody in the chat room for showing up and for having some discussions. Sorry I missed out on that. I did provide some of the links to that. Still kind of getting the hang of running the show. It's been just over a month now, but I want to start getting a little bit more involved in this chat room, especially with the brand new chat room. Don't forget, if you're listening in on our archive, you need to check out the show live. It's really exciting with this new message board or a chat room, I should say, and it's highly interactive, and we're going to be putting that to very, very good use in the upcoming shows. And with that, that's all I have. For the Paranormal News Insider, I'm Brian Parsons.
You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.
Thank you for listening to CJ Mars Radio Network, WCJV Digital Broadcasting of Youngstown, New York. We're bringing you the best in paranormal broadcasting 24/7, featuring shows such as At Past Dead Paranormal, with host Roger Bell, Mondays at 8 p.m. Eastern. Paranormal News Insider, with Dr. Brian Parsons, Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern. Paranormalities and Ponderings, with host Frank Lee, Tuesday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Paranormal Experience, with Ken Hobson, Wednesday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Starlight 17, with Deborah Jane East, Thursday, 8 p.m. Eastern. Black Swan Path with Auntie G and Mumsy B, Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern. And finally, The Paranormal Chronicles with G.L. Davies, Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern. Stay tuned for the best in paranormal. Let's learn together. That's what we do here. Don't forget to tune in. CJMarsRadio.com.